There's lots of tech talk going on at the Olympics, from the speed skater suits to the bobsleds designed by BMW. How far can these technologies take athletes, and how far should they take them? Will the Olympics become a technological arms race in the future? Joining me now to talk about this is Mark McCluskey. He's the editor of Wired. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me.
What are some of the really big technologies at this Olympics this year?
I mean, a couple you just mentioned, I think, two of the biggest technology stories that have come out of these games. The first being the bobsleds that BMW spent a lot of time and energy working on for the U.S. team. And those led to some really good results for U.S. bobsledders. The first medals that the U.S. two-man program has won in 62 years came in that sled.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there was some controversy over the speed skaters having, they were saying the uniforms actually slowed them down.
Yeah, it's been a big controversy indeed. You know, Under Armour, the apparel company, worked with U.S. Speed Skating to design this suit that they spent, again, years and lots of wind tunnel time and working with aeronautics engineers to increase the aerodynamics of those suits. And the U.S. Speed Skating team has had a miserable Olympics, the worst that they've had perhaps in the history of the program. And the question has arisen, is that actually because of the suits? Has something gone wrong with those suits? And there's some suspicion that that perhaps they did, that the testing wasn't done in a competitive setting, and it didn't account for some of the airflow issues that happen in competition.
Has there been any suits that, besides this case, that or any other technologies that really have made a difference, that you can really say, wow, it's because the technologies were winning the races here?
You know, I think that the piece we just heard about U.S. skiing makes this point really well, that it's hard to draw a straight line to say, oh, because of that suit, you won. You know, the margins are so small in these events, you know, hundreds of a second, less than hundreds of a second. There was a tie in the women's downhill to the hundredth of a second. And to say, oh, that suit won it because it might have given you that margin, it's hard to say. So many factors come together in an athletic performance like this. I think what Troy from U.S. Skiing was saying is, you know, this is the icing on the cake. This is sort of in some way, it's the table stakes for your athlete to make sure that you're giving them every advantage that you can so that their performance can get them over the top.
Mm. We did hear, though, from Alexis' piece with the rocket scientist, he wound up saying, you know, we can give them all kinds of technologies, but they don't use it, or if they don't use it correctly, or if they're just so talented, it really boils down to the athlete.
Or if they don't believe in it.
If they don't believe in it.
Those sort of, you know, again, looking at the U.S. speed skating suit example, you know, once you start to wonder if the suit's a problem, it's a problem. Even if it's not actually a problem, as soon as that thought crosses your mind, you know, we know that placebo effects, that belief effects are so powerful in human beings that as soon as you don't believe in your, you know, it's the flip side of an athlete can arrive at the start line thinking, I've got the best technology and equipment in the world, and it gives me this huge advantage, and I'm going to be awesome because of it. Or they can arrive at the line thinking, like, oh, maybe this suit isn't as fast as it could be, and is that a problem for me? You know, that's a horrible moment for an athlete. And you know, to have spent, you know, at least 4 years, if not a lifetime, trying to get to that moment, it's hard to walk to the start line and not be as confident as you could be.
Mm-hmm. Have we reached a limit where we're saying, you know, this is a race, maybe we should cut back? Are there limits? I mean, there are cases. I remember when the Olympics swimsuits were banned, right? And there was the debate over Oscar Pistorius's legs giving him an advantage.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the question of limits, right, is, I guess what I would argue is that in some ways we are at least approaching the limits of sort of the inherent performance of our bodies, which you know, is always a dangerous thing to say, because as soon as you do, somebody does something incredible and then you're proven wrong immediately. So I think that more and more those increases in performance are going to be driven by science and technology, and whether that's equipment like this, whether that's new training techniques or new nutrition insights or ways of, you know, hacking people's motor learning based on what we know about motor learning science, I think that it's going to be increasingly difficult for sort of an athlete on his or her own to really make those sorts of advances.
Now, I think one of the most famous cases of that kind of thing where an athlete alone made an advance was the Fosbury flop and high jump.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes backwards over the bar. Now everybody does it.
he goes backwards over the bar. You know, it's one of those moments of sort of inspiration. It also had sort of a technological underpinning, which was a foam landing mat. You know, in the past, landing pits in the high jump had been sawdust or even just sort of loose dirt, and it's a little more difficult to decide you were going to fall 7 feet onto your back. And so, you know, those sort of technique changes are definitely still out there. I think again, we've optimized a lot of those things at this point. But, you know, part of what keeps us coming back as sports fans is the possibility of those aha moments like that.
Mm. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI. Talking with Mark McCluskey, editor of Wired.com, about the technologies used in the Olympics. How closely do Olympic officials and the Olympics, people who control the Olympics, watch these technologies?
You know, very closely. They're sort of, each sport is governed by its own governing body. So there's the governing body for skiing and for bobsled and for luge and skating. And, you know, all of those international governing bodies, as they're called, really watch these things closely. And it's a balancing act. It's sort of a question of what we're hoping the contest will show us, whether we want it to be a contest between engineers or a contest between athletes. And there's a balance there that I think most of us are comfortable with as sports fans, but one that's sort of constantly in flux. You mentioned the swimsuits. I think that was a good example of that, where it just seemed like swimming times had gotten so out of hand because of the technology in the suits and not because the athletes were potentially getting better. And so the International Federation changed the rules to ban those suits.
So there's no thought about standardizing technologies for everybody. You know, we have one bicycle, you're going to have a bike race, we have the same bike for everybody.
You know, there are some sports that do that. The sailing does that at the Olympic level. Sort of everybody has the same boat. You can't do much to alter it. You know, in some forms of auto racing, there's sort of single class racing like that, where everybody has an identical car. But then you look, those forms of racing are far less popular than Formula One, which is a total technology fest, right? You know, that there's some broad parameters around it. But, you know, part of what people like about that sport is the constant pushing of the engineering envelope.
Did high tech, this movement toward very high tech, did that follow the allowance of professionals in sports, do you think?
I think it probably accelerated it. I think more than what this sort of professional amateur divide in Olympics, I think it's more just like the size of the business of the Olympics has grown so much, and there's just more money available for that sort of thing.
Are we allowed to say the word Olympics?
Exactly. You'd be very careful. You know, that thing in Russia right now. You know, it's... people have always been pushing these envelopes. You know, the history of the pole vault, you can sort of see a transition from wooden poles to fiberglass poles to carbon fiber poles. And, you know, that's happened over 100 years. So it's nothing new, but I would say that as technology has accelerated in many areas of our life, it definitely has here as well.
But, you know, one thing that they did stop is sports medicine. You know, doping, blood doping first, and other kinds of enhancing drugs. They must have realized there was a limit somewhere along the line.
Yeah, they did. You know, the history of doping is again long and sordid. You know, it really, you know, despite the headlines in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, I would say sort of the dark heyday of doping was, you know, the 60s and 70s in the Eastern Bloc, and, you know, state-run programs that were giving athletes steroids and telling them that they were vitamins.
Yeah. Right, so,
you know,
it's, we think.
You know, you know, it's certainly, it will never be gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's to think that people won't cheat in sports is naive, because people cheat in all areas of life. But the you know, there is certainly better detection of more things than there ever has been.
And we'll always keep watching it, Mark. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us today. Mark McCluskey, editor of Wired.com. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.